What is Web3? Why should you care about it? And how will it shape the future of the creator economy? Well, this is exactly what we are going to explore in today's episode of Build Your Thing. My guest today is Alan Taylor. So Alan Taylor is an award-winning journalist and a former newspaper editor. He has been a freelance online content writer since 2006 and has authored, edited, and published several fiction and nonfiction books, including his latest, Web3 Social, How Creators Are Changing the World Wide Web, and How You Can Too. With that being said, Alan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot, Matt. Glad to be here.
Before talking actually about Web3 and, you know, all the other good stuff, can you give us a little glimpse into what Web1 and Web2 actually are?
The short version is Web1 was very static. You could go up online and you could read web pages, but you couldn't do a whole lot else. You couldn't really interact with them. It was basically read only. Web 2 allowed for a little bit more flexibility. Readers or website visitors could actually interact with the content on the page. So they could leave comments, you know, like on blogs, and they could create content like on wiki, type websites. You know, Wikipedia is a community edited encyclopedia. You could watch videos and you could basically interact sometimes in real time with the authors of those web pages or the creators of those web pages. Web 3 builds upon that foundation of the internet to allow writers and creators to own more of their content and monetize it in various ways.
Okay, this is quite interesting because I've been hearing a lot about Web3, right? So a lot of people are talking about it. And honestly, I really don't know if this is actually a hype or is it really something that would actually shape the internet in the upcoming years. So at one time I was just thinking, well, it seems like Web3, this is perhaps a kind of a new quote-unquote darknet for Reddit crypto bros or, you know, that kind of thing. So can you give us a little bit more context about, okay, what is actually Web3 for and how can we benefit from it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think in some ways, Web3 is still being defined. But I think probably the best way to explain it for someone who's not familiar with it or maybe a little confused by it is, again, to go back to Web 1, Web 2, and look at the basic infrastructure, how the internet is actually built. And it's essentially built on protocols. If you look at Web 1, you have SMTP, which is the email protocol. When you check your email, it's because of SMTP. You can read what someone else wrote and sent to you for that protocol. HTTP, Hypertext Transfer Protocol. You're able to look at websites online because of that protocol. So the internet really is built on protocols. So what is a protocol? A protocol is simply a way for computers to communicate with each other. Nobody owns it. Nobody owns HTTP. Nobody owns SMTP. Nobody owns the protocols of the internet, the basic infrastructure on which it is built. They might own a website. They might own certain assets that are built on top of it. But nobody owns or controls the underlying technology. Does that make sense?
Perfect sense, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what Web3 is doing is it's adding additional protocols that nobody owns, nobody controls, but that anyone can use to go on and publish on the web, monetize their content in new and interesting ways, and own more of their intellectual property rights. Which we can get into in just a little bit, but there are all these benefits that come about from these new protocols that anybody can use, nobody owns, and nobody controls.
Okay, so that's quite interesting. My question right now is, I stumble across, and even like in your book, you give a lot of different platforms, right? But the way how you access those platforms, I guess it's still with the HTTP protocol, right? So how does this how is this actually different?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we'll take the Hive platform as an example. Hive.blog is a website that you can go to and you can create an account. You can do it anonymously. They don't collect your email address. Okay. What they do is they provide you with an online digital wallet and a set of keys. They're security keys. A fancy word is cryptographic keys. But those are your access ways to access your account. You don't do it through email like you would on Facebook or Twitter. And you can write content, you can create content, produce videos, whatever type of content you want to publish. And basically run your own publishing company on the platform. And is it on HTTP? Do you see it on the web through a browser? Yes. But because of the underlying protocol, which is the Hive blockchain, it contains certain properties that other websites built on HTTP do not have. And so one of those properties that is very important is immutability. And what that means is once it's published on the blockchain, or once a transaction is conducted on the blockchain, it cannot be erased. It cannot be tampered with. And so, for instance, if I send you some Hive currency from my account to yours on the Hive blockchain, nobody can take it away, not even me. I can't reverse the transaction. Once I send it to you, it's a done deal.
That makes perfect sense. So obviously, right now, you just talked about cryptocurrencies. So what is the kind of the relationship between Web3 and cryptocurrencies?
Good question. Yeah, I don't want to say they're synonymous, because I think Web3 goes beyond cryptocurrencies. It's about more than just cryptocurrencies. But it does include aspects of cryptocurrency. And there are different kinds of cryptocurrency. And so this is where it gets a little bit murky and difficult to explain to someone who isn't familiar with the terms. But really, all cryptocurrency is a digital data, what you might call digital data pocket. And it contains different properties. Sometimes it contains monetary properties, so it can be used as money. It might also be used as a utilitarian instrument. In other words, it can help you do something that you can't do in any other way. For example, some people might use a cryptocurrency or a token, a digital token, to allow you to access their website, behind a paywall, for instance, or to access an exclusive Discord server. If you're familiar with Discord, a lot of the channels are public. Anyone can join them, right? But if you have a special token in order to get into one, then you can't gain access unless you have that token. And so there's a utility involved. So you really have to figure out what is the cryptocurrency for, what is its purpose, what can it do? And Web3, is what facilitates all of that. To make certain things more seamless, easier, and efficient. It also provides content creators a different way of monetizing their content. So in the past, what have you your options were, you know, through affiliate programs, through advertising, through subscription models. There are various ways to monetize your content on Web 2, but all of them involve using centralized services like PayPal or going through your bank. And if for some reason you violate somebody's terms of service, then you can lose your account. So you might lose your PayPal account if PayPal doesn't like what you're doing, or if YouTube decides that your content isn't right for their platform, they can demonetize you or deplatform you. Suddenly, you might lose your whole means of making a living. You know, if you rely on that for your income. With Web3, the platforms don't have that ability because Hive, for instance, which I spoke about earlier, nobody owns your keys. You own the keys to your account. Nobody else has access to them. It's not a centralized organization. It's decentralized, so nobody owns the protocol. There are various ways to access it. And if you get cut off from one way, you can just go another way. There are different ways around things. So it's a little bit more flexible. You have more ownership over your content and how you distribute it. It's what they call censorship resistant.
I really like that point because, you know, as a creator, you always have this love-hate relationship, right, between you and actually the platform. You're posting on just to get some visibility, right? So this is why I always advise people, okay, once you have, let's say, some visibility, the next first thing that you have to do is get people on email list because it's kind of an asset that you own. So I think Web3 goes into that direction. So now my question is okay, if let's assume, like, regardless of the platform that we're talking about, so let's assume that because I read in your book that some of the platforms still have some kind of, can I say perhaps, terms of service or ways to actually, you know, kick you out. So my question is there, like, for those platforms that claim that there is, like, no censorship, is there still a way that they can use to actually hide your content from the users?
Yeah, I don't think shadow banning is very prominent in Web3, but it could probably happen on certain platforms. There are different, degrees of decentralization. So when I look at the Hive blockchain, which I talked about earlier, there's no way anyone could block your content or keep it from being seen. Well, there is actually one way, but it would require the effort of multiple people with a lot of stake on the platform downvoting your content. But that's how decentralization works, is because it's not just one person who is attacking you. In the case of Hive, it's based on an upvote downvote system. So if you have a bunch of powerful people downvoting your content, then possibly your content could be pushed down. But there are no algorithms. So it's not like Facebook, where if somebody interacts with your content a lot, then they're going to see your content a lot. On Hive, you have to look for the content that you want, and you follow the people you want to follow. You subscribe to the content you want to subscribe to. And even if that content's downvoted by a bunch of powerful people, you can still access it because you chose to access it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, got it. So it seems like Web3 are kind of, or let's say, those Web3 platforms are kind of platforms that have their own protocol. But the thing is that there is a little bit less censorship and perhaps also a an easier way to monetize this audience on those platforms. But there are still platforms, right?
Yeah, they are still platforms. And so, for instance, there are a few out there where I'll use Publish0x as an example. Publish0x doesn't technically fall into what I would call the Web3 paradigm. And there are several reasons why I would say it does not, even though you can earn cryptocurrency on the platform. Number one, you sign up by email. And so because you sign up by email, it's inherently centralized right from the beginning. They also, if you want to be a creator on the platform, you have to apply to be a creator and they approve you. So it's not like Hive where you can just go up, create an account, and bing, start creating. On Publish, you have to be approved. So there is that, in that sense, because they can either approve you or not approve you, there is that sort of censorship there. But they have their criteria for choosing who they want on that platform. At first, it's a crypto-focused platform. So if you're not writing about crypto, you're probably not going to get approved because they really want people who are writing about crypto. Even though I have written about other things other than crypto on the platform, I got on there because I write about crypto, and then I published a few travel articles on there. But the content that earns the most on the platform is crypto-related content. So it's just what that platform is all about. And so everyone is different.
How do you see the discoverability on Web3, since we are still working with platforms? So how do you see things are going to change? Because let's say if today I want to build an audience, I have several options. I could use, let's say, I could go for SEO. I could go for creating a YouTube channel. I could go for creating a Twitter account, LinkedIn. So I do that because I know that they have more or less distribution, right? So they have a lot of eyeballs, and this is how I actually can start build an audience. So how do you see this working out on Web3?
Yeah, that's a great question. In some ways, it works the same. At the end of the day, whether you're a writer or you're a video content producer, a vlogger, or a podcaster, at the end of the day, you have to create content that your audience wants. So you define who your audience is, who are you targeting your message toward, and you create content for that audience. And so once you do that, once you figure out who you're writing for, who your audience is, what kind of content you want to produce, then you find the platform that will cater to that. And so if you're a video producer, you produce video content, you might be interested in Odyssey, O-D-Y-S-E-E. That's a video platform. There are others like, you know, ThreeSpeak and DTube. And so if you just pick the right platform for your content and for your audience. You know, there are other platforms like Mirror and Hive that are better for textual content, or at least facilitate text-based content for writers. Then there's Paragraph, which is a newsletter content platform. And all of these have different features that might be interesting to you, or that could be useful to you in your business. And so you just figure out which ones are going to be better for the kind of content that you're creating and for your audience. And with just like you would with Web 2, you would go and look at who the audience is using those platforms. So you might go and look at LinkedIn. It's a business-to-business platform, right? If you are a business-to-business content provider, that's a great place to go. If you're more business to consumer, Facebook might be a better place to go. The difference is that those platforms are larger than any of the Web3 platforms right now. But if you have a niche audience, then maybe a Web3 platform could facilitate that for you.
Okay, so which means that it all comes back to the audience and the audience that is actually on this or that specific platform. So how do you see those platforms get more eyeballs in order just to quote unquote make it worth it, right? Because obviously, let's say if you're writing about crypto, I don't think that picking the right platform is actually a hard thing, right? Because it's just the ecosystem that's built around it. But if let's say you want to, I don't know, let's assume, okay, I'm happy people, let's say, build their and monetize their content through online courses. So what would I have to figure out in order just to pick this or that platform? And can I actually find today my niche or my target audience on those Web3 platforms?
Yeah, no, good question. I think probably for most people right now, particularly people who are entrenched in the Web2 culture, if you've been running an online business for a decade, you're probably already on several different platforms. You already have an audience where you are. Maybe you have a large YouTube following. Maybe you have a large Facebook following or a large Twitter following or Instagram. Yeah, it's going to be hard to leave that behind because your audience, probably a large part of your audience, isn't going to be interested in change. People are by nature resistant to change. So the question is, I think for most Web2 creators right now is, can I leverage Web3 technology, Web3 platforms to find a new audience for what I'm doing? And I think probably for most Web2 content creators, the answer would be yes. So the question then is, well, where do you go to find that audience? And that's where you have to kind of analyze the content on those platforms and see who the audience is for that those platforms, what kind of content you're interested in creating, and you go where you think you're more likely to find that audience you're looking for.
Okay, that makes perfect sense. So how would you approach that for someone who just wants to, you know, dip their toes into Web3, perhaps position themselves to just ride the wave at the right moment? Like, as an example, could I, let's say, create a content or create a, let's be specific. So could I, let's say, create a Medium article or a YouTube video and then post it obviously on the Web2, on like using actually Medium and YouTube, or does this content has to be quote-unquote kind of exclusive for those platforms?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. What I would do is I would start with content I already have and repurpose it for the Web3 platforms you want to experiment with. In Web2, you're pretty much discouraged from reusing the same content. And a lot of people will blame Google on that. You know, there's the whole duplicate content discussion, which as someone who's done a lot of SEO work in the past, I think there's a misunderstanding about what Google's duplicate content rule is. So I've never had a problem repurposing or reusing content from one platform to another. The issue is, which one do you want to designate your canonical? You know, which one do you want to be ranked? You know, if I don't care that a certain article is ranked on XYZ platform, I don't mind republishing over there. I don't, because I'm not trying to use that as an SEO tool. I'm really more interested in finding a new audience. So yeah, I don't think there's any issue with redistributing content you've already published on the Web3 platforms. If you're really just experimenting with them to see if you can find a new audience or reach a new audience or maybe monetize your content in a little different way, if you want to take advantage of some of those benefits that I discuss in my book, then it's perfectly acceptable to reuse existing content. In fact, some of the platforms make that easy. Odyssey, for instance, will allow you to pull in all of your YouTube videos into their ecosystem. so you just you just import them and it goes right in. And so some of the other platforms too have import features that allow you to pull in content or subscribers from other platforms.
Okay, that's pretty interesting. So this is actually a low-hanging fruit strategy just to get started and just discover the ecosystem.
Yeah. And there are ways that you can do that. Number one, it's kind of like sticking your toe in the water. Is this something I really want to play with right now? And number two, it's learning how the tools work. So maybe you don't want to invest a lot of time in it. You may not want to do, 10 or 15 hours a week on this, but you might want to spend maybe 1 or 2 hours a week. So you're not creating new content. You're taking maybe some of your best content that you've produced in the past and saying, I want to try out these two or three different platforms here and see how they work. I want to play with the tools. And that can be, informational and educational in its own right, because it helps you understand how the tools work so that when you are ready to make a bigger commitment, then you already are familiar with it.
Let's talk a little bit more about the monetization options, since you talked about that. Well, Web3 makes everything more seamless than it is today. So if today, let's say I want to sell my online course, well, I have to, first I have to get a payment gateway, right? I have to create a bunch of different things just to get my course into the hands of my customers. So how will this become easier on Web3?
Yeah, that's a great question. The way that's done in Web3 is through what we call digital wallets. And there are several of them out there on the market. Every blockchain has at least one wallet. Some of them are interoperable and some of them are not. So it takes a little bit of research. But let's just take Ethereum, for instance. Ethereum is one of the largest blockchains in existence. And there are several wallets that interact with Ethereum. One of which is a browser wallet called MetaMask. And let's say you have content that you want to put behind a paywall. You can make your website or whatever platform you're using, not all of them interact with MetaMask, but quite a few of them do. But you can connect it to MetaMask. And what users do when they show up to interact with your content is they'll click the connect button. Okay. They're basically saying, I want to connect my wallet to this website. And they go through a series of steps to do that. It takes like 30 seconds, to connect a site to MetaMask. And if they already have a currency in their wallet that you accept, then all they have to do is transfer that from MetaMask to your wallet and gain access to whatever content you're selling. So I'm trying to simplify it for people who may not be familiar with the terms yet. But it takes just a few seconds in most cases to connect a wallet to a website, and just a few seconds or maybe minutes to transfer a particular cryptocurrency from one wallet to another. Whereas with PayPal and other forms of traditional money services, it usually takes 3 weeks, or if it's across borders, it might take up to a week or two, depending on whether you have to go through SWIFT or not. And so the financial system of Web3 makes things a little bit quicker and a little bit easier for people, especially people doing business internationally.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes perfect sense. So right now, is there any, let's say, platform that, is there any platform that you think is interesting for people who want to sell online courses on Web3 right now?
Oh, wow. I haven't personally looked into course selling platforms for Web3. So I'm not quite sure what to recommend regarding that. There is one, though, that I think might have some potential, and it's primarily a newsletter platform, a decentralized newsletter platform. It's a more like a Substack alternative, and it's called Paragraph. And with Paragraph, the interesting thing about Paragraph is you can gate your content behind a paywall, and they call it token gating, and essentially require users to either own a particular token that you've created, either on the platform or on another platform. It's very flexible. They have a subscription model where you can take token subscriptions. So basically sell premium content on a subscription basis using cryptocurrency as the payment model. And that's fairly easy to do. And that could be used to manage course content. So if you have, I don't think they have video uploads, but you could do, if you're doing a lot of writing and you're selling text-based content and you want to bring in some embedded YouTube videos to flesh things out, you could do it that way. But it's a brand new site, so I think that they will be adding new features. In fact, I'm in constant contact with their founder, kind of helping them create new features to use. And one of the things that I've been told that they're working on is allowing fiat currency payments. And so this would be a really cool, once they roll that out, this would be a really cool platform for anyone who wants to try Web3, but don't want to leave behind the Web2 ways of doing business. Then they can do that both on the same platform. And I'm really looking forward to those features coming online. Yeah. Yeah, good question. I haven't actually done it, but it doesn't look like it's really difficult. There are a few platforms out there that help creators create their own tokens. And you just go through a series of steps, tell it, how many tokens you want to create, 100,000, a million, whatever. You set the basic parameters and then click the button and there they are, and you can distribute them however you wish. I haven't explored token creation really in depth. It is something I've considered myself, but I haven't actually implemented. So, but I am thinking about ways to do that. I'd prefer to be able to do it without going to a third party platform. And there are ways to do that. They're a little bit more complicated. I haven't researched those options. But if somebody wanted the easy peasy way, then there are probably three or four different platforms out there that help you do that with just a few clicks of a button.
So I think it's more kind of an ego thing, right?
It could be. There's some very interesting literature out there where people who have created their own tokens have experimented with that, and there are some mixed reviews on whether or not there's value in that. One of the dangers with creating your own token is there are a lot of people out there who will flock to new tokens and buy up a bunch of them in speculation that they will go up in value. And then what happens is if the token does happen to catch on and become popular and rises in value significantly, then those speculators will sell. And if they own a lot of your token and sell a lot of them, then that could create an economic crash in your personal economy.
Ecosystem. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And that has happened a few times. So creators are now looking at ways to minimize that, to make sure that that doesn't happen. And there's some really good literature out there on that, but I haven't experienced it myself. So I haven't got a lot to say on that. It is a good question, though. I will look into researching on that. I think it'd be a great article for my newsletter. But it's important to understand the risks involved when you're trying something, and figure out how to minimize those risks. And so that's why I mentioned that.
Yeah, I was just really curious about it. Like when I saw some people in the. Yeah. Okay. That makes perfect sense. So. Now let's switch to your book, right? To the latest book, Web3 Social, How Creators Are Changing the World Wide Web, and How You Can Too. Talk us a little bit about what you're actually covering in the book and why should our listeners get it?
Yeah, great question. So what I tried to do in this book is kind of give an overview of the history of the World Wide Web, how it developed, and how it started as a Department of Defense asset in the early 60s called the ARPANET, and it was decentralized. Okay, its main feature was this decentralization, which meant that anyone that was using the system could log in from any of the nodes that existed or computer servers that existed anywhere in the world. At that time, when it first came on, it was basically U.S. and Europe. Other nations came in later. But there was no one basically that owned the ARPANET. It was a Department of Defense asset, but they created it to be decentralized because we're at the height of the Cold War, right, in the 50s and the early 60s. And they were afraid that an attack on a U.S. communications system might take down the basic communications infrastructure that the military and the government needed to keep operations going. So they created the ARPANET as a go-around to prevent that from happening. And it worked perfectly. What happened was over time, I go through the details in the book explaining how that transformed into the internet that we know today, how the World Wide Web came about, and then over time, how the World Wide Web has transformed into a centralized version of the real world, what I call walled gardens. So you've got Facebook and Google and Microsoft and all these companies that are essentially building their own closed ecosystems, and they own and they control the assets. And why is that important? So I explain why that's important for creators, because you don't really own the content on the platforms. The platforms own it. So everything you're creating on Facebook, while it might help you run your business better, while it might put you in front of potential new customers, may even generate leads for your business and therefore generating revenue, Facebook really owns the content that you're posting there. And that's a problem. And I explain why that's a problem, and then go into how Web3 fixes that. And it's done by turning the internet back to its decentralized roots. And so I explain the technology that happens, that helps that happen. And then I get into the platforms where creators can go to monetize their content, own their intellectual property, have more control over how their content is distributed, and how they can go directly to their fans rather than through intermediary platforms like Facebook that have more control over their content and distribution than the creators themselves.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I've actually read your book, and I think that, you know, understanding history and how things evolved are actually really, really important just to understand what's going on actually and how things will evolve, right? Because we are in such a fast-changing world. But when you understand history, when you understand why things have been created and how they evolved over time, you'll be able to radically make better decisions. And you've done like an amazing job just to, you know, to synthesize the all the history in just this in this book. So congrats on that. And I would strongly recommend to anyone who's listening to this, who wants to, even if you don't want to, let's say, dip your toes into Web3, just at least understand how Web1 and Web2 actually work, how they have been, quote unquote, created, so that you can ultimately take better decision and see if you want to dip your toes into Web3 right now or just wait until it takes off. This is like then up to you, but at least, you know, getting kind of a background of understanding how things evolved.
Thank you for the compliment. Yeah, I put a lot of research into it. I wanted to understand, you know, because of my journalism background, I want to understand how things work and how we got from there to here and, you know, why things are the way they are. And so I delved into all of that. Some people may not be interested in that, and some people may be. I think, like you said, it's important to understand history a little bit so that you don't repeat it, or so that if you're running a business, then you know what factors, external factors, are playing against you in the management of your business. And in Web 2, there are a lot of those factors. I think it's important to understand what they are.
Yeah, awesome. Alan, I'm going to leave a link to your website, your book, and also like your, I don't know how to call it, like your channel or your handle on Paragraph. So all these will be in the description.
Yeah. And anyone that wants to, you know, contact me, if they have questions specifically for their situation and they want to contact me, they feel free to do that. They can reach me through any of those avenues, through Paragraph, through my website. And there's contact information in the book as well.
Exactly. Thank you very much, Alan, for this great conversation. And, well, wishing you all the best for your future ventures.
Thank you.
All right. So hope that you've enjoyed this episode. And as always, you're going to find all the links we mentioned in the show notes. And if you're a content creator or want to become one and want to monetize your knowledge online, then be also sure to check out my free emails, because in my daily emails, you're going to learn how you can speed up your content creation workflow to create more content faster and thus attract more clients online in less time. It's the first link in the description. Thank you very much for tuning in today, and I see you next week.